Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, a technical program about data networking published several times per month. We're an online community of network engineers and architects who talk about what we do all day. We discuss topics like TCP/IP, routers, switches, data centers, and so on. I am Ethan Banks, co-hosting with Greg Farrow, and in today's show, sponsored by TLF Systems, we're joined by Carl Moberg, Vice President of Technology. And Greg, I just wanted to say hello, sir, from across the pond, and how are you?
I'm working in the cloud, and I'm losing track of where I am. Can you bring me back to the ground, please?
You need to look at your instruments, sir. Please trust your instruments. Everything's going to be fine.
I'm working in the cloud, and it's just so disorientating from 20 years of networking, where we know where everything is, and we patch a cable in, and we know exactly what's happening. The cloud is sometimes a little baffling. So, if I sound a little detached from reality today, I blame it on that. How's that?
Very good, very good. That works fine. And it's funny you bring up cloud and so on, because I know SDN is to some degree part of what you've been looking at and some of the work that you've been doing. And on the show today, we are going to saddle up the SDN unicorn and ride it around a little bit. But we're going to put a serious hat on the unicorn that says practical. And we know from talking with many of you out there in the network engineering community that you still view SDN, software-defined networking, with skepticism. You're going, yeah, I get the idea at this point, but what can it actually do for me? Make me care. I dare you. Okay, TLF is working on that practical angle, along with the solutions that are out there, but TLF especially has been around and doing this for a while. We're going to talk through their network control system, what it is, what it does, and why you should indeed care. Carl Moberg, again, thank you for joining us on Packet Pushers. This is your second time on the show, I think. But for those that don't know you, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell them what you do at TLF?
Well, thank you, Ethan, and hi, Greg, and welcome back to the ground, I guess. It's my second time around, and I'm very happy to be here. It feels like I have two radio stations I listen to profusely after having relocated actually out of Sweden to San Jose. It's the National Public Radio stuff, and it's you guys. So I'm honored to be here. So now my title has actually slightly changed since we spoke last, I believe, about a year ago. I've switched into Silicon Valley mode, so now I'm known as the VP Technology at TLF Systems. It's kind of vague enough, but important sounding enough that people kind of listen to what I do. So what I do these days is actually that I drive a couple of directions in standardization that TLF is particularly interested in. I spend a lot of time close to our customers and the market in general here around our NCS product.
That's great. And thanks for coming by. Now, I got a briefing from you, a couple of weeks ago, talking through NCS and what the product does, what network control system does. Now, at a high level, it's a controller. It seems to be more focused on network operations and giving operators the opportunity to do a whole lot of interesting things with the network, but not have to deal with the individual network devices underneath. And why don't you kind of introduce what network control system is and the problems that it's solving?
Let me recap a little bit. So the company as a whole was actually founded on kind of the high-flying premise of improving configuration management in the networking industry. And part of the founding team is actually academics from the beginning with a very strong background in distributed systems and compiler technology. So we're kind of thinking about ourselves as a group of computer science people applying some of that stuff, let's say, in networking. And we have been working hard for the last about 3 years on our network control system. Well, nowadays, I mean, the easiest way to describe this is to say that it's basically a software that sits in the center of the network, and below NCS, there's a variety of multi-vendor, ranging from basically optical stuff to layer 7 stuff, a network of hardware or virtual machine-based devices, and actually since recently also OpenFlow switches. And above NCS, there are normally humans, that sometimes there are humans with ponytails, normally network engineers. right? And, you know, in very expensive chairs. With several terminals running at the same time, or management applications. You have your common orchestration systems or workflow systems or policy engines, or for some of the service providers, actually traditional OSS systems. And of course, what's interesting for these types of entities is that they need a comfortable way, a comfortable abstraction layer to the network. And we believe, and kind of at the core of NCS, is that there's two features that any ambitious system of this type needs. And this is way before we go into the actual implementation details like OpenFlow or I2RS or anything like that. We believe that there's a lot of value in using data models. So we are heavy, heavy data model users, both to represent the way devices work and the way you manipulate them, but also on the services layer. You basically need to remove the details of the actual network implementation for any of these consumers of the system. And something that we're very heavy on, and we've been going on about this for a long while, is that the concept, and of course a good implementation of transactions spanning across the participating objects in the network, is also key. If you have these two things, strict use of data models and transactions, this allows all the northbound interfaces, you know, spanning the applications, but also the ponytails, to have a shared and consistent view of both the network state, but also all the services. And I guess, you know, just for the audience, I guess the canonical kind of service provider service is a VPN, and the canonical enterprise campus is a VLAN spanning a lot of branch offices, combined perhaps with some filtering or other edge services. And just in combination, this significantly reduces and actually at some angles removes some of the classical problems in scalable network programmability. So while SDN concept is nice and it's a very useful language, I think you're right in the sense that current customer base, because we actually have people running this and have been running it for a while, and we're actually deploying this with existing networks, is what they're looking for is automation and comfortable programmability.
So the model construct there, that's a good concept to get across. I get that philosophically. Now, an engineer that's listening to this is going, okay, so he's talking about abstracting the network, and it sounds like NCS is a bit of middleware that means I don't have to log into individual switches, but what do they actually log into then? How would they actually push a configuration into the network using this system and using the models?
One of the things that is really influencing the way we develop now this product after having, you know, actually deployed it a couple of times is the cynicism coming out of a large part of our audience. As you can imagine, most meetings when I go into battle-hardened network engineers, they give me 30 minutes and they are leaning back, you know, when I go into the room. So the first thing is that I have to kind of try and get past years and years of disappointment with solutions like this. And you guys know that there have been a lot of, actually several generations of supposed, you know, solutions to this. So there's a couple of things in here that's really, really important to get across fast. So let me try and summarize that. NCS is based on a tree-structured and in-memory database that's highly optimized for, you know, for scalable pushing of configuration and reading of configuration to the network. And this data store actually holds both the models for the devices, basically a way of expressing, if you like, for example, in a box that supports a CLI, the structure and the syntax and the semantics of that CLI, in what way you can talk to and affect the box. But also for services, again, like a VPN. A VPN has two endpoints, which is physical or virtual interfaces. And it's got a name, perhaps, and it's perhaps associated with a set of quality of service parameters. But it also holds the configuration data for that live network, right? So we got the models and we got the configuration. If we have that, actually we can provide, or actually out of the box, or we can generate, if you like, all the northbound interfaces coming out of this box, like a CLI or a web UI or a REST interface or Java. All that is actually just a way of traversing, if you like, and manipulating the models and the data that's loaded into the system. So if you look at, I mean, there's basically two, let's say, extremes in the audience for this product. One extreme is infrastructure engineers that some of our customers are deploying networks in a pace that I never thought would be possible. We have a customer here in North America that are deploying on the order of 30 racks a week with a team of like 5 to 6 people. So they're just holding on for dear life. Yeah, yeah. They're just holding on for dear life, right? And they have a hard time recruiting people. So they just need to be more efficient, more productive with what they have. And just the fact that you can have a CLI that's spanning, you know, all the participating equipment in your network, independent of the vendor. So you can give actually, you know, for example, junior engineers can get access to all the Ethernet interfaces, perhaps pointing towards the workload machines. and you just make structure changes over the over that whole network piece of the network, independent of the vendor, and actually be, make them be more productive. And on the other end, we have service providers that have a, an increasing frequency of change in the network, driven by things like VPNs. They just don't have time to assign work orders and print sheets and give to people anymore. They basically need software to drive all these changes, and they're happy to program for it. So they would rather take, you know, the REST interface or the Java interface. So again, the CLI guys manipulate on the device level what they need to do from a single CLI, and they use transaction for it.
I guess one of the points to note there, and this is a hobby horse I'm going to ride around in the near future, is that the CLI, to some extent, has might have reached its use-by date in networking. At least that's what I believe. Because what we're seeing now is people who are deploying, you know, what you just said, 30 racks a day. If you're deploying that many devices in a week, the CLI doesn't scale for that type of activity. We need to have graphical interfaces or different types of tools that allow us to get past the CLI. And I know someone's going to sit there and say, you know, you can create scripts that automatically generate them, and you can do, but if you've got scripts that can generate the CLIs, but we don't have tools that can get the CLIs in and out of the devices and configure them early, and the scripts still need a certain amount of manual configuration, your modeling concept that TailF brings to the table is, it knows what the network looks like, and it knows that if you're going to put a switch in here, and then the user puts the data in, and then it says, well, with those inputs, with this visual concept of the network, I'm going to generate this CLI and then put it into the switch.
Here's what's important for us. It is, well, I hate to use the word trivial, but it's trivial to add or allow people to use various means, again, of manipulating the data, which means the models and the configuration, in NCS. You can literally, in demos, we show them, you know, you fire up a Cisco-like CLI and provision a VPN. You exit that, and you fire up a Juniper-style CLI, and you set up a couple of Ethernet interfaces, and then you go to the web UI and provision a VPN. For us, it's just various means of manipulating this data, and it's going to come down to, I'd say, for now, and maybe, you know, I'm jumping up on the horse behind you to be more visual, you know, it's going to be more about cultural background of the people. And we see exciting changes or exciting shifts as they grow into a system like NCS. You're right. They're going to start being, again, backward-leaning, a little bit cynical. They have their hardline approach that they want to keep their control commands in the Juniper-style CLI. But they will eventually grow into, oh, that's cool, you know, a single command for VPN. Why don't we make that into something that I can click on and so forth. So think about it as an onboarding thing, right? They start with what they know, and then they culturally grow into using other means. So I wholeheartedly agree. It's just a question of how fast and how.
A point that's worth making though is you've got this model here, and then the CLI you're talking about, a Juniper style or a Cisco style CLI, that I think the big point you're making here that I want to drive home, you don't really care what interface your customers want to use to access the network and program it. You'll let them do whatever they want. You know, it doesn't imply it's Juniper there if they're using the Juniper-style CLI that's interfacing the NCS model of the network. You're just giving them an interface they're comfortable with, whatever that happens to be, and whatever the hardware underneath happens to be.
Exactly. And, you know, again, we see simple benefits like, okay, we can, again, reuse our Juniper-style CLI, but we're going to manipulate configuration data that's residing on a network that has actually zero Juniper devices on it. It's just a means of allowing people to manipulate that. And even though we may have our own, you know, perhaps even personal view, I think it's highly ironic that some of our early customers actually started scripting towards the Cisco CLI that sits on top of this beautiful invention instead of using something more programmatic. But, you know, it's a way of growing into thinking of a controller or a control-based network, and we'll just give them what they need.
And I think there's a very subtle thing happening here is in the past, one network engineer might manage, you know, 50 or 60 devices. And I can starting to look at a future in private clouds and larger networks where I'm no longer going to have just a couple of firewalls at the edge of my network. I might literally have 30 or 40 firewall clusters through my virtual infrastructure. There's a sea change coming in the way in just the number of devices we're going to own and the complexity of the networks. This is where SDN, and I think we're going to touch on SDN later in the show, and the thing that drives products like NCS and why they're so important to networkers is today we have, you know, a couple of routers at the edge of the data center and a couple of firewall clusters at the edge of the network and a couple of core switches. It's actually possible to configure the CLI, but the future of networking is 20 or 30 virtual firewalls inside of a VM cluster, 20 or 30 virtual routers inside of a VMware cluster in those environments, you know, and perhaps no physical firewalls and perhaps no virtual routers depending on your particular organization. We're just going to be managing just the same way in VMware that we had physical servers and then they went virtual and then we had an explosion of servers and it was no longer enough to have the simple tools that Microsoft Windows provided or the simple tools that VMware provided. We needed to have a layer of tools above those to manage this, you know, explosion in a number of devices. This is coming to networking and that's the challenge that NCS is stepping up to achieve with these tools. And these models that Carl's talking about is a way of abstracting the configuration data into a consistent way of configuring any tool anywhere.
You're absolutely right. And actually, here's a data point, again, from my recent experience. We were part of the British Telecom proof of concept that eventually then turned into the NFV effort inside of ETSI. You know, it's a slow-moving standardization push. I mean, some of the things that we're seeing inside of NFV, certainly both in the proof of concept that our partners seen there and what's happening now, like you said, I mean, for example, it's going to be interesting to see how much shorter the life cycle of certain data passing functions are going to be when we think about, you know, a very efficient way of firing up and horizontally scaling and then turning down certain data path elements in a potential future NFV network. So just like you said, you know, the scaling dimensions is going to explode. People can now literally fire up new firewalls and routers and, you know, layer 4, layer 7 stuff in seconds, have them work for a while and then just bring them down and maybe even moving them while running to other parts of their infrastructure. So again, the complexity of the networks, both in terms of the frequency of change, but also the complexity of each change is just, you know, going through the roof. I mean, it's not looking to be more simple going forward.
Well, Carl, why don't we get into a bit more of the under the hood stuff? What is NCS actually? Well, I guess I want to talk about the model specifically. You got three different kind of models, as I'm looking at your slide here, that show service models, device models, and flowlet models. Could you describe each of those to kind of give us the idea of what constructs in the network you're actually modeling, how you do that modeling, and then, you know, what the point of it is, each individual model? Why a service model versus a device versus a flowlet model?
A key understanding here, which I should mention, is that NCS is what I call an unbiased system. It actually doesn't know much about networking, specific networking concepts. If you started up with no models, it's truly a glorified letterpress. It knows nothing. It's definitely something that requires models to do what you do. And a way of positioning and a way of thinking about NCS is this. If what you have is a single vendor network, and if what you're doing with that network is something straightforward, maybe just VPNs, and that's what you're planning to do forever, then I think turning to your anointed equipment provider and having them, you know, pass you or give you the software to provision VPNs is going to be a much more efficient way forward. Now, most networks in the world are inherently multi-vendor, right? Actually, the services that are running on top of them, even though many people don't think about services yet, is actually changing fairly rapidly. Maybe you have only, you know, VLANs across your enterprise campus network now, but you're definitely going to be challenged on adding packet or, you know, stateful firewalls and load balancers and WAN accelerators over time. And that's going to change based on what the users of your network, you know, kind of requires. Again, to come back to the implementation details of the system, we use the Yang language coming out of the IETF, RFC 6020. We've been instrumental. We've been very committed to bringing that to market. We think it's a great and expressive and detailed language to describe the configuration parameters, the operational state, and actually some operations that you can do on network devices. So for us, that was a great fit to describe how to talk to network elements. It's a very formal way of describing what a network element can do. Mm-hmm. We took the idea that we could use this also for the services layer and went to some friendly service providers that we know and sat down with their product management and actually one large enterprise, would you believe it, in Sweden as well, and talked about the service that they had in their networks and realized that we could implement the networking or network-facing side of this using Yang. So it is actually possible to have a useful description of a VLAN spanning several campuses or a VPN in a service provider environment or a BGP peering setup. Basically, things that are spanning several devices also using Yang. So we have both the device models and the service models. We use Yang for that. And the big benefit for NCS and for our customers is that if you have a formal modeling language, an actual concrete modeling language that knows the difference between, let's say, just a number and an unsigned integer 32, is that the problem or challenge in transitioning or transforming, let's say, an instance of a service like a VPN into actual concrete device-specific commands becomes trivial because a system like NCS needs to do this in the general case. It doesn't have any hard-coded knowledge about what a VPN actually is. This has to be described in the service models, in the mapping code, and in the device models, right? So having formal languages for that is great. And also, it's detailed enough that you can drive all northbound interfaces with no coding from it. So the CLI engine can start up and start manipulating both, of course, the model in Yang and also the content without any coding, because it's got enough details in terms of data types and references and data structures in general that it can just work, so to speak. And same thing goes for the web interface and, of course, the REST interface. Most of the traditional network elements that we have in networks, which is basically what our customer base is doing, are configured in a way that I guess the OpenFlow guys and girls would call proactive, right? You push configuration to the network and you don't expect much back unless something bad happens. Now, if you look at the OpenFlow world, actually there's two ways to think about it. There's the proactive and then there's the reactive. Without, you know, diving too much in the weeds, but OpenFlow has this notion of packet in, which is a way for a switch to send information or actually send packet content or frame content back to the controller and have the controller react to that. We haven't seen too many actual implementations of real net production networks running reactive mode, but we're sure that's going to be something that people will eventually get to. So for the OpenFlow side of things, we actually needed to support both ways, right? So we actually needed more of a controller function. But at the same time, we really wanted to be able to have services span OpenFlow switches and traditional networking gear, which is, again, more of the proactive type.
One of the things I want to interject at this point is you're highlighting another key issue or why systems like NCS, to my mind, are also vital, is a lot of us have been thinking of a network as a device and another device, like one device at a time. We have a router, we have a firewall, we have a switch, we have an MPLS, we have a... And then we configure each of them as a single thing. We don't...
Right.
And because we have just one or two devices, so, you know, I'll come back again to the data center, we have a router, those pair of big routers at the edge that face towards the internet and another pair of big routers that face towards our WANs. So that meant that we could treat them like one, and because all the servers go through them, they share the same piece of infrastructure. It was possible just to configure a single device. But in reality, what you were configuring was a service chain, and that is a service would flow through the router, through the firewall, through a load balancer, across a switching network or routing network until it got to the point where it's going to be. And the future of networking is moving towards the flow instead of the packet. And the flow is where the end-to-end connection. So we got to stop thinking at layer 3 and start thinking at layer 4 about the TCP session coming from the client to the server. How do I configure the whole network to configure the session instead of working out hop by hop where everything goes? We've solved the routing problem. These models and these architectures that you're talking about are targeting at configuring all the elements in the chain of a TCP session to get the connectivity together so that you can groom the entire service model that you need to deliver to the business.
I think that's an excellent way of putting it. I think that is, I can't even improve on that. So actually, one of the I think maybe just to add to that, as we're now talking mostly about services, you know, it's NCS quickly qualifies the discussion with our customer base, right? You get out of the weeds and into the services. And a pattern, a very strong pattern that we see is just what you're describing. Some people call it service chaining. It's basically a way of capturing some sort of filtering criteria for traffic flows or for, you know, for traffic, and then guiding that traffic through an ordered set of, well, appliances or applications, if you like. And that goes across from enterprise campuses to mobile backhaul to data centers to everywhere. So we see a very strong pattern for that. And of course, you know, we now have, you know, we're converging on a model for it that we think is useful across, right? And we describe that in Yang. And it becomes pretty straightforward when you take out the minute details of every hop in the path. On the other hand, it's not a trivial challenge, because it is, as far as we can see it, if you want to deploy this now, it's inherently a multi-vendor, multi-protocol, and multi-technology problem. You may have the benefit of, you know, depending on which way you're leaning, an OpenFlow switch to guide the traffic, right, with some clever VLANing and stuff like that. But the most of the applications that people want to use today, DPI, stateful firewalls, and load balancers and WAN accelerators, are inherently not OpenFlow, and likely we'll have to wait a while for them to become OpenFlow. But at the same time, a service must span them for it to be useful. And this has wide implications, all the way from, you know, is it really useful to talk about appliance vendors' single pane of glass if they are going to be participating in a larger service, to the fact that, well, are there any well-defined APIs for these appliances? I'll tell you here now, it isn't. But this is certainly a direction we see a lot of the service providers that are growing into service thinking. They're taking this stance, this direction.
I wanted to restate something, Carl, here, and that is, we got talking about the models, and again, these three specific models that NCS offers, service, device, and flowlet. I guess in a larger SDN conversation, we hear a lot about northbound versus southbound. Services would then be kind of the northbound functions, that sits above a controller, and then device and then the flowlet models would be roughly analogous to what is happening southbound. Is that a fair way to put it? And I just bring that up because that's such a common way that SDN solutions are describing what their controller does and the role that it plays as it takes an application or business policy and shoves it down into the network.
I think it's roughly fair. Let me clarify a little bit around the flowlet model. So again, I kind of wrapping all the way back to the fact that I said that we're doing both proactive and reactive applications for OpenFlow, right? So what that means is that you have to have some type of application environment running inside of your system, some code or some logics that's going to take packet in, for example, and do something clever with it. Now, those applications, let's say one of the canonical examples, of course, are learning switches or packet shapers. Those applications will also have configurables. A learning switch obviously has things like table size. They may have, you know, what to do with certain arriving PDUs. And that's actually our OpenFlow or flowlet models, ways of configuring the OpenFlow applications. And we need that, you know, because basically, again, like I mentioned before, we need to be able to say that, you know what, this VPN actually spans a virtual port running on something running Open Virtual Switch, and maybe an Ethernet switch from another vendor at the other end of the network. That whole idea of separation of concern, that the services must be able to span various types of technologies. And we also think that that actually allows us to think more clearly about what OpenFlow can bring to the table. And it actually puts it kind of in the place where it belongs, a way of delivering or manipulating networking services that is then hooked into a larger world of services that are spanning both elements using happen to use OpenFlow, but also traditional network elements that will never, because of the nature of the service, will never actually implement or be implemented using OpenFlow.
So to distinguish between device models and a flowlet model, device model would be something that is modeling, let's just say a switch, a traditional switch, call it a Cisco switch. You've got some kind of a model that describes what that is, but a flowlet model is really oriented around OpenFlow and describing, you know, OpenFlow behaviors and what that might do with a particular OpenFlow device. And you've actually got, really, NCS is a full-on OpenFlow controller.
Yes, it is actually a full-blown OpenFlow controller, but it's highly integrated. And the reason we did that, again, is because we need services to span elements that run OpenFlow or takes OpenFlow communication and traditional network elements. And, you know, if you look at the mainstream controllers on the market, they are usually not granular enough to allow a system like NCS to do that. If you look at the northbound APIs coming out of Floodlight and others, they usually hide, or if you want, destroy information about the applications running on these switches or driving the behavior of these switches, so that we can't, as an external entity, for example, implement VPNs spanning over switches controlled by a Floodlight and others. Now, having said that, of course, we already have integration with actually Floodlight through REST going through our traditional network element drivers. But again, that's not really enough. So we needed an integrated OpenFlow controller, and there's a number of other features to it that's also needed for this type of environment. It needs to be horizontally scalable and clustered, and you need to be able to do efficient application deployment and things like that. So yes, it's an OpenFlow controller integrated into the system in a way that allows people to drive their services on top of or across elements that use OpenFlow.
Now, there's a piece of this solution that has come up. One thing that is going to be of concern to anybody who is pushing configuration information down into network devices: how do I know that it is working? How do I know that it actually happened like I programmed it? And you've got a notion here called transactional integrity. Want to talk through that?
Absolutely. And as I mentioned kind of in my introduction, is this is truly what we believe is one of the two things that is required by a system like this. It's modeling and it's transactions. If you want or if you need transactions on any distributed system, there's a couple of things you need to think about. And this actually comes out of very early conversations we had. Most of this industry is thoroughly burned by provisioning systems that doesn't provide the ability to either complete a set of changes running over your network, or make sure that the whole network is back to a previous known state, which is the basic assumption of transactions, right? And actually, the key point here is to have a robust and automated implementation of rollbacks, you know, in the face of errors. Say you need to go out and touch three network elements. You may perhaps using CLI for two of them and OpenFlow or perhaps NetConf for the third one. If something happens in the, you know, middle box, in box number two out of three, you need to be able to both roll back whatever you did to that box, but also whatever you did to the box previous in the chain. And you need to do this in a robust fashion for the general case. And this is truly the key issue here, because this allows applications and, of course, end users on all the northbound interfaces, regardless of whether it's the CLI or the REST interface or the web UI, to trust the fact that what they're seeing through NCS is actually a reflection of what's running in the network, just a basic way of having the map in sync with the terrain. And the one issue that I get, because at this point in my normal presentation, people are still leaning backwards, is the question of out-of-band changes. If someone, or you know, actually, not if someone, when someone changes something on any of the network elements that NCS is controlling, what do you do? And they expect me to blank. But of course, this is something we understood real early, and we made that kind of a prime feature of NCS. And we implement a very efficient set of operations to check the sync, you know, just to check that we're not out of sync with the network. Depending on the way you talk to these network elements, we use transaction IDs for protocols that do that, timestamps for protocols that do that, hash, you know, actually hashing over a configuration for protocols that require that. It doesn't really stop at that. We need to also leverage some of the other features so we can detect the structure of the change. It's not just enough to say, oh, we seem to be out of sync with that box from vendor Y, you know, running over a CLI. But we need to actually detect the structure and give the operator, regardless if it's a management application or network engineer, to give them the opportunity to decide on the direction of a reconciliation. You know, either we write over the network because that person or application knows that that change actually impacted some of my services, so just write it over. Or someone sees that, well, you know what, that's a clever change. Actually, that brings up par with policy. So let's bring it on to NCS instead. And you can use a number of means to do this, right? You can use polling or asynchronous messages. Again, it's going to come down to the nature of the things that you manage. But you need to track potential out-of-band changes and react accordingly. And this is actually one of the things that I love presenting, because I hopefully can make it sound easy, but we did spend a lot of time making sure that this is a general solution, because this is actually kind of going to the core of the problem for many of the, you know, attempts at cracking this problem here.
for every step forward, you have to be able to regress so you don't walk over a cliff.
Yeah.
Exactly. Unless you're, yeah, right. Unless you're a cartoon character, because in that case, you can just turn around midair and run back. Bolt back.
That's right. Yes, so, Carl, what I would like to do to kind of close out the podcast here is, well, a couple of things. One would be, how do I bring a TailF NCS controller into my network and get started with it? And then, now that I'm using it every day, what am I actually doing? In other words, put yourself in the role of a network engineer or an operator who needs to leverage this tool to accomplish a particular change, like a provisioning change to roll out a new VPN or something like that. What are you actually doing? How does it work? What's it look like? That would be helpful, I think, to the audience here to really wrap their brain around exactly what's happening.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And what you do, first of all, you invite me. I love going to live networks, and I will bring with me actually NCS probably running, or maybe a pre-installed NCS running on one of the servers in the network operations center or wherever data center they have, or I bring it on my laptop, right? And what we do, and actually one of the things that people seem to like, due to the fact that a database for this problem space must be memory based and must actually be running in physical memory because of the scaling implications of some of the things that are happening in networks. This is something that can be deployed on any, relatively mainstream server without a database backend tier, which for some reason many of our customers really love. You don't have to drag in a lot of third-party SQL databases and stuff like that. So what we would do is that we fire NCS up and we will seed it with reachability information, right? You have to tell NCS either through manual means or by using discovery systems, tell them, where do I reach the network elements? And what kind of network elements are they? And from NCS point of view, you need to tell it that's actually, for example, a Cisco box running iOS, or that's actually a Juniper box running, where you can use NetConf for that. So the first thing you do, and this is actually how we also start all the demos, is that you do what we call a sync from. You tell NCS that now go ahead and contact all these, actually open up sessions against all these network elements and, draw in the configuration and map that to the models that we have. I mean, that's just the first thing. And what you get then right away, and this is usually when I pass the keyboard over then to the network engineers, we can give them, a web UI or CLI or REST, just to show them that you can now literally traverse all the configuration that you have in your network. You can start manipulating the changes, play around with changing stuff. And of course, you change things locally first in NCS, and then you transact it to the network. And of course, again, having this as a central server, right, you can start doing things with ranges. One of the things that people like to do is, of course, any good demo changes the SNMP community, right? So change the SNMP community for all Ciscos that have an Ethernet interface that's up or something, silly like that. Just start to understand what this will mean to them with a CLI. And that quickly then qualifies the discussion into what is it that you're doing to your network repetitively that you're tired of, or you're failing enough that your boss is tired of it, that we can start doing using NCS. And then actually, depending on the nature of the team, of the company, it can go in various directions. Some companies are very, they know very well what they need to do. Maybe they have a big number of changes related to QNQ VLANs, and they want to be able to automatically move QNQ VLANs from ports in their POP boxes, or change the SVLAN for some reason for some of these QNQ VLANs. Just things that takes a lot of time, a lot of manual work, and that's very error prone. Others, again, have a portfolio of services that they need. Again, VPNs. So they want to go directly to building a service that describes what a VPN is in a way that they then can take to their product managers and have intelligent conversations about what can be changed, what can be added to such a service. So the first, technical setup is real fast, usually a couple of hours. And then we kind of go back to the drawing board and say, okay, tell me about the things you want to automate. Tell me the things that you want to, provide automation around. And we'll start working on the service models for that. And that, again, that's kind of the start of the journey.
It's really that straightforward. I assume that they could run this box, the network control system, in a VM on something if they wanted?
Oh, absolutely. you know, literally, Ethan, it's a Linux daemon. So we're happy to package that in a virtualized format. You can take and install it on whatever you have. It's going to come back to usually the IT policy of the company.
One of the things I like about this solution, Carl, about NCS is that it kind of removes the operator a level from talking hands-on to the equipment, which of course is an obvious desire. You want to get away from having to program every device individually. But there's another element to it, which is the human error aspect of it. So just it's confessional time. I was working on a Cisco box the other day, was running an XOS, and I missed one word in a command. And instead of changing the inheritance of a port profile for an interface, I actually blew away the port profile, which clobbered a whole bunch of interfaces, which I was able to recover from it quickly. It wasn't all that severe. But I had that clenching, sweating, seat-of-the-pants moment where it's like, oh, geez, what did I just do? What I want you to tell me is that NCS makes those moments go away from me because I'm no longer directly interacting with the equipment. I'm having NCS do it for me. Talk to me about that a little bit.
Right. That's a very useful confession. And you know, I've done the same thing a couple of times in my operational years, and I think most people who have actually worked with networks have done that. Otherwise, they're very you should be suspicious.
I've never done it. Never,
you, of course,
ever.
Never.
No. Never.
And
no.
You have the scores to prove it. Right. Right.
Yeah. No, not while anybody's listening.
Exactly. The good thing with computer programs is that they're normally very good at repeating things. And of course, NCS is no different. You know, kind of tying back to the way we deploy this and the way network engineers like to work with this is that when we do these first steps and actually show customers how NCS works, that one of the also very common questions is that, okay, I want to see what you're planning to do to the network before you actually fire it off. So we have implemented a number of, let's call it transparency features, right? You can, in a very straightforward fashion, say, okay, so I want to deploy this VPN, for example, based on this VPN service model that I have. But before I actually do this to the network, please show me how you decompose this into per-device configuration changes, both on a kind of a database level where we show then, okay, so this is going to include the following network elements. It's going to manipulate these parts of the VPN configuration. But we can also drive this through the network device drivers. So actually show them, and it's going to result in these exact Cisco or Juniper or NetConf, you know, sequences of operations. What really I think the useful thing in the way we show this and where people kind of start to lean forward is that then you can go ahead and do arbitrarily complex configurations, both on the device layer, but also on the services layer, while continuously reviewing the changes that we are proposing to do to the network. And of course, you can put these changes to the side if you want and have, you know, someone with even more subject matter expertise sign off on it. So we're just trying to be very, very, very transparent in the whole transformation going from services to the devices. And that's usually enough of comfort factor for most, you know, battle-hardened and cynical network engineers that they, you know, feel comfortable doing this. And of course, the first couple of weeks, they spend a lot of time reviewing the changes before they shoot it off to the network, and then maybe they forget to do it once, and then they're more or less comfortable in doing it. And of course, the good thing, Ethan, is that NCS doesn't fat finger things or you know, leave out things.
Exactly.
It may have other shortcomings. It's a little bit thick around you know, social conversations and stuff like that, but it won't mistype things unless you program it to do so. So it kind of addresses that human aspect of it if you give it the chance. And of course, as you can imagine, just introducing something like this is a little bit of a cultural shock or cultural challenge. But most of the engineers that we talk to are so wary of some of the things that they're doing on a daily basis that they're willing to, again, allow me to come over and present to them. So it's usually, you know, propelled forward by their needs to, their need to change.
Yeah, that would have saved me in my confessional story, because it was just one of those moments where you're in a hurry and you're trying to get something done and I missed a keyword and then I had that oops moment as opposed to having run a change like this through NCS, where I could have described what I needed to get done through commands. It would have generated the code for me. The code could have been reviewed by myself or by other people on the team and then sent at a later time. That definitely, that would have been, A, not that my bad, as you said, command, my human error, wouldn't have been made, number one. And then number two, there's still an opportunity for other people to get their eyeballs on what's going on and bless it before it goes off and is sent. So,
Right. And NCS is pretty fast, right? So it can do it for you literally hundreds of times a second if you, for some reason, need that without mistyping, which is actually the case for some of our customer types. But it also brings me to this idea, guys, that, and I'll be more than happy to help. You guys should have a take on anonymous alcoholics, but with network engineers in a circle and, you know, doing the normal speak for AA. But everybody confesses of one catastrophic outage that they, you know, because they mistyped something. And that's a great thing for young engineers. You know, they get to see battle-hardened guys, you know, standing up and confessing that they screwed up half of Sweden, which I did in the night. I'd be happy to help. Just call me in and we'll make it happen. I'm sure there's a lot of people around Packet Pushers that have horrible stories to that.
Yes. Thank you. I'm sure we do, but I don't know if my legally I'm allowed to. That's a very gray area.
I guess it is. Yeah.
You can do it in a bar, and you can have like who caused the biggest outage.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. All right, it'd be great. You know, my name is Ethan Banks. Hi, Ethan. I have a story to share.
Right. That's right.
Thanks for sharing. Right.
Well, that seems like a good place to end our podcast today, Carl. Why don't you tell folks how they can follow you and how they can contact TLF if they're interested in NCS?
Sure. I am mostly monitoring these days because I do a lot of customer visits, but I'm definitely at Twitter at C. Moberg, C-M-O-B-E-R-G. I am, of course, also available at carl.moberg@tail-f.com for anyone interested in talking about this, because I am for sure. And actually, we are kind of improving on our website. So I think tail-f.com is also a very good place to go for some additional entertainment around these products. And feel free to reach out. Again, this is what I do all day, every day. So I'm always interested in the discussions.
Great. Thanks for being on the show, Carl. We really appreciate it. It's one of the neat things about the podcast is just all the different interesting people in the industry that have been able to come on and share their knowledge with us and with the audience. So thank you very much for coming on and for sponsoring the show today. Mr. Farrow, what are you up to this week, sir?
I'm pretending that clouds are exciting in my usual style. Don't tell them.
Focus on the silver lining. Focus on the silver lining.
Yeah. But this discussion is actually close to my heart because I'm actually trying to scale out into large sizes and to be able to do a thing called continuous deployment. So my cloud environment needs to be able to be deploying perhaps as much as once an hour into my data center, and it will do it 24 hours a day. And it's tools like this that give you the capabilities that you couldn't or previously do. Like I couldn't make networking changes if I had to hand it off to an operations, follow the Sun Operations Center to do deployments on a regular basis. And these are the sorts of tools that we need to think about. So I'm excited to talk about tools like NCS and throw them out to you because I know I'm ahead of where a lot of people are, and people say, you know, get feedback on the IRC and on the forums and on Twitter, you know, you're doing things that are different to us. That's true, but there are also things that you will be in the future, and it might be 2 or 3, 5, 10 years in the future, but eventually we'll all be doing these things. And that's what interests me about this product, is it's a sign of what the future looks like. Open flow, configuration management, automation, orchestration. This is a form of orchestration that doesn't involve code. And that's the sort of thing I'm doing this week.
That's great. I'm coming over. I'm bringing beer.
You can follow Greg, of course, at Ethereal Mind. Visit his blog at etherealmind.com. I am Ethan Banks. You can follow me on Twitter at ecbanks. I also blog at networkcomputing.com and at packetpushers.net. Packet Pushers, of course, is our hub. That's where you can find all of our content. And if you follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers, you'll be notified every time new content goes out, whether that's a new podcast like this one or a blog from our community blog feed. If you have any questions about this show sponsored by TLF, you can contact Carl, as he mentioned, or feel free to send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com, and we'll get it to the right person. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.